Welcome to the Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Have you ever wondered why politicians don't follow through on campaign promises, even after winning elections? Well, often it's not just politics. It's the Overton Window, the range of ideas considered politically acceptable at any given time. This concept was developed by Joseph Overton, the Mackinac Center's former senior vice president. And in each episode, we explore this shifting window and engage with individuals working to expand the boundaries of what's possible in American policy. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Parisot, and today we're joined by Sandra Herndon, a Michigan mom and police officer who advocated for her special needs son during the COVID-era school transitions to remote learning, and Steve DeLee, an attorney with the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation. After Sandra spoke out at a school board meeting, the board retaliated by reporting her to her employer and the U.S. Department of Justice. The Mackinac Center filed a federal lawsuit in 2022 to defend her free speech rights, with Steve arguing her case before the Sixth Circuit of Court of Appeals in June of 2025. Sandra's story has gained national attention, appearing in media like The Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and Fox News. Sandra, Steve, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Sandra, for those unfamiliar with your story, can you walk us through how you found yourself involved in a federal lawsuit? That's definitely not something most people experience in their lifetime.
Yeah, it started back when COVID hit. All three of my children were in the Chippewa Valley School District. COVID hit, and there was really no game plan in play for them to receive education for the remainder of the school year. And they said, you know, this is just temporary. You know, we're going to go back face to face the following school year, and everything's going to be fine. Well, there wasn't anything further from the truth. Probably 2 weeks before the start of the school year, they had told us, oh no, we're doing remote. And I said, okay. We sat down with our kids and said, listen, what do you want to do? You're not going to be in school. You're going to be remote. We can switch you to another district that is going to be in person. You know, this is a game changer for all of us because I'm not a teacher. Your dad's not a teacher. And our two oldest boys said, you know, Mom, it's not going to be forever. It's probably just going to be for a few weeks. We'll be fine. Well, weeks turned into months. And I noticed a huge shift in my children's emotional states, their attitudes. And I'm sorry. And it scared me as a parent. And I started going to school board meetings saying, look, you know, here's the different stuff that's coming out on the internet that, you know, why can't we have, I was even, if it meant my kids going back to school in a mask, I would have been fine with it just so they could have what they needed when it came to their education, especially with Connor. And it was to the point that it was a daily emotional breakdown for my children. And it wasn't, I'm a mom. You don't want to see your child depressed. You don't want to see your child unhappy. You don't want to see them emotionally struggling. You don't want to see them consistently having meltdowns because the online school that they had put in place for their assignments to be submitted, that they would have to redo assignments over and over and over again. And then the isolation. The isolation from their friends, from their day-to-day normal life was a huge toll that it took on them. And I couldn't stand by. So I started emailing the school board and said, look, you know, what can we do to get our kids back to school? They need, you know, they're going to lose education. I said, socially and emotionally, it's not good for them. And I never got a response, which I expected. And I continued to email, and then I started showing up at the Zoom meetings that they had to speak about it. And I think I probably spoke at 4 or 5 meetings in total. And the next thing you know, I'm finding out, I believe it was the summer of 21. Was it, Steve, the summer of 21?
Yeah, I think that sounds right to me, Sandra.
That the board president had referred me to the Department of Justice and said that I was a ringleader of a group that was causing chaos and disrupting their school board meetings, and that I was going around to all different school districts. And that wasn't the case. I was fighting for my child primarily, but it wasn't just me. It was other parents like me that were too scared to go to the school board and to talk to the school board, because let's face it, doesn't matter what school district you live in, every parent is afraid that the school district, the board, the superintendent's going to retaliate against you or your child. And that was the case here.
Yeah, I mean, what was your reaction when you found out that the school board went to your employer, went to the Department of Justice?
Well, when initially I had found out that they had gone to my employer, I was extremely upset. I was, and to be honest, yeah, I was angry because this is the time of George Floyd, and the comments that were made in the email about me being racist, it was literally a death sentence for me if my department, through their investigation, found anything in what in that email to be true, regardless if I was being a mom and not a police officer. And my job, my livelihood, my children's future, everything financially was on the line. And I was very thankful that my department said, we know the delineation between you being a mom and you being a police officer. And this is you being a mom. It has absolutely zero to do with your job. We don't understand where this is coming from. But that's that. We looked into it. You're not in any trouble. You just did what any parent would do.
Yeah,
And then,
it sounds like you were one of very few parents speaking out at the time, because it was, as I remember, a very scary and chaotic time.
it was. And I understand that COVID was something new for everyone, but you try as a person to be informed, and you try and look up what you can on the internet. You go to the different websites, the health websites, of what new study they found with COVID now. And at that point, it was masks. Oh, if we have masks, we can, get back to normal or somewhat normal, semi-normal. And they wouldn't even entertain that. And I hate to say this, but they really did try to use our children as pawns. If it wasn't, oh, you're going to kill your grandma and grandpa if you go to school. Oh, you could kill your parents if you leave the house because, it's so deadly and it's going to ravage society, when that wasn't the truth at all.
Right. And in fact, the policies being implemented actually harmed your children. Can you talk a little bit more about one of your sons whose grade point average suffered?
Oh, Connor. Yeah. He was, believe it or not, even though he is special, well, he graduated now, special needs. He had a 3.5 grade point average. He was doing really, really well. He was in sports. With some of the social anxiety that he did have, the years leading up to the pandemic actually kind of subsided, and he was starting to come into his own. He was, making friends and just being a typical preteen teenager, right? And once COVID hit, his grade point average plummeted. It wasn't for the lack of him not doing the assignments, it's just he didn't understand it. With Connor, when we speak with him, we have to have that eye contact with him to understand. At least at that point, we did. He's more or less kind of grown out of that aspect. Even sometimes I have to reel him in, but and he couldn't understand. He's like, Mom, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm not a teacher. All I can do is go on the internet and say, I think it's this. I don't know how else I can help you, but I'll help you research it. We'll go through it. We'll look at videos. Math was horrible for him. Reading was horrible for him. And just some of the day-to-day assignments without him getting that extra connection that the teacher helped build really took an effect on him.
How did this situation and advocating for your children motivate you to kind of be one of the stronger voices in the parent community in Michigan?
Well, there's nothing as a parent that we won't do for our children. And I think being a police officer and, having over 2 decades of law enforcement experience where we don't give up until, the bad guy goes to jail, so to speak. It really doing my job gives you that instinct to keep fighting because, when I'm out in the street, if I don't fight, I can die. I can
Right.
get hurt. And I'm very thankful with that aspect because my job makes me a stronger person emotionally and I would hope psychologically. And I know that that is what helped get me through a lot of it. And, I guess I'm different because I see the world through a different lens. And I hate to use the word, regular parent, but I don't know that parents that aren't police officers would be able to put up with the fight and the negativity that came along with it.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask. I know that obviously the school officials didn't respond too well to your concerns, but what was your community, the fellow parents and whatnot, like? How did they react to your stance?
Well, I had some people that were not supportive. And to this day, I can say that I've gotten a lot of support, not just here in the state, but across the country. I've made some amazing friends and relationships along the way. So it's good to know that I wasn't the only one, because at some point you think, oh my, going a little loony or crazy, for lack of a better term. And almost like, am I the pariah? And that wasn't the case.
Courage begets courage, and somebody needs to start standing up, and somebody's got to light that spark. Not to sound too cliche, but it has to happen, and it sounds like you were one of the few who, stood up in the gap and advocated against the policies that were obviously causing great harm to Connor and to your other kids. So I'm sure you have set a really great example for parents across the country. I mean, you see it now. Parents are very invested in their kids' education now, and there's way more interaction with school boards now, and I think that's a good thing. Steve, you argued the case in mid-June at the Sixth Circuit. Can you just give us a sense of, well, first, what it's like to argue before a federal court, and then how arguments went?
Yeah, absolutely, Anne Marie. So I guess I'll lead off by saying it's nothing like you might expect if you've seen it on TV. There's, it's a very measured process. Oral arguments are really a question of what the law is and how your case fits into the law more than it is about the facts of your specific case or even what's just or unjust about it. So the arguments in our case, there's a lot of intricacies and nuances, but we're essentially the goal of the court was really just to get to what the truth was and what the law required. And I thought the oral arguments went well. It was more of an intellectual discussion about First Amendment law and retaliation law than it was any kind of real argument. The judges were definitely engaged with our argument itself. They asked some really great questions to try and get at the real difficult aspects of the law. So, we're still waiting for an opinion on that, but I'm optimistic it'll be favorable.
Some might argue that Sandra actually didn't experience harm because, she wasn't fired. The DOJ didn't pursue any action against her. So how do you respond to people who claim that she didn't actually, get injured?
Well, I guess I'd respond in two ways. The first is kind of a factual issue, which is if you just, I mean, you just got to listen to Sandra, you understand that she's tougher than your average citizen. She looks at the world in a different lens. She's more resilient. She's what we call a person of extraordinary firmness. So things that would intimidate you or I don't affect her in the same way in terms of damages. The other thing I would say is that even if we assume that there was no, monetarily compensatable mental or physical injuries here, you're still talking about government officials taking advantage of their elected positions of power to silence opposition against them, and by doing so, discourage everyone else from speaking out against what they believe is wrong. And that just can't be the way that society functions. That can't be okay for public officials to do. Sure, in this case, the investigation by Sandra's chief cleared her of any wrongdoing because she didn't do anything wrong. But in a bad department or any work environment, the outside pressure might be too much for some supervisors. Same thing with the DOJ. Yeah, the DOJ may not have rolled up in black vans for this one, but I would live in fear if I was worried about that happening. And so when you have government officials focusing retaliatory acts on a vocal opponent, it takes everybody else and removes the courage that that person is inspiring others to have, and it takes it away. And so it cannot be the case that government officials can retaliate against citizens and get away with it as long as they don't cause any kind of monetarily compensatable injury. I mean, Sandra's case is what we're really asking for is $3 and an apology. And I think Sandra would agree with me that we'd be more than happy to waive the $3 if they just admitted they were wrong and said they were sorry.
Yep.
And instead, they're probably spending a lot more money on litigating this case. It's with
Yes.
taxpayer money, probably. So,
Yes.
yeah. At the end of the day, Steve, if the court rules, gives you your most ideal ruling, what would that look like?
Our most ideal ruling would really be a recognition that at the end of the day, if you retaliate against somebody for exercising their First Amendment rights, you can be held accountable. Whether or not you cause them money damages or not, they can still sue you. They can still get a court to say, no, what you did to this person, to this citizen, was wrong. And it's really more about the impact of that ruling, which is to say, it would reinforce the principle that government officials can't retaliate, and they shouldn't be already. But right now, if the ruling comes against us, it essentially sends a signal of, well, unless it was so bad that somebody has to go to a psychiatrist or experience some kind of job loss or something else, that it's okay to do that. And that we don't think that's right. And we want public officials to know that that kind of behavior isn't going to be tolerated under our Constitution.
What are the next steps in the case?
Sure. So right now, we've just completed the oral argument in front of the Sixth Circuit. Anybody with experience with the justice system or courts in general knows that it's a slow process. So realistically, we're looking at least a couple of months for the court to issue a decision. It's called an opinion. So we'll see what the court has to say. We may get a unanimous decision one way or the other. There may be some splitting where one judge says one thing and another says another. But once that opinion comes out, if it's favorable to us, we'll either have to go back down to the lower court and try the case. Both sides have asked for a jury to hear this. Or if they decide in our favor, the case might be over at that point. If they decide against us, we really have two more options. One is to appeal to the entirety of the Sixth Circuit. So when you appeal to a federal court, you get a three-judge panel that evaluates your claim. we can say we think this is an important enough case that every judge appointed to the Sixth Circuit should hear this. That's called en banc. So that would be one option that we could take if we think that the broader panel needs to consider it. And then the other one is to go to the United States Supreme Court and ask them to hear it, because we think this is an issue of major importance. It's an issue that the Supreme Court has weighed on fairly recently in a couple of cases, and we think this could really reaffirm the principles of First Amendment retaliation law. So bottom line, Anne-Marie, is we basically have to see what comes out of our oral argument right now. And then based on that, we'll decide what the next stage is to continue to advocate for Sandra.
Sandra, how does it feel that your case could potentially go to the U.S. Supreme Court?
You want to know what? It's been a very, very long fight. And sometimes I will break down and cry and say, why do I keep doing this? And it's like, and I hate to sound prideful when I say this, or I take it how you will, but every time I feel like I'm knocked down, God's there lifting me up and saying, you're not done yet. You're not done yet. You know, I picked one of my strongest warriors. This is your fight. You can't give up. And that's exactly what I plan on doing.
Wow. Well, that's extremely inspirational. How is your son doing right now?
Oh, Connor is amazing. He graduated in May with honors. He is actually working a full-time job now in construction, which he really wanted to do. He is happy and he is absolutely content. So I couldn't ask for anything more.
Well, that is wonderful to hear. And I have one last question for you. I'm sure there are other parents who are listening right now, just feeling inspired by all the years you put into this and staying strong through it all, through the highs and lows. Do you have any messages for parents out there who either are scared to speak up, or they just aren't going to speak, they don't want to speak up because they feel like their voice isn't going to affect any kind of change? Do you have a message for them?
Your voice absolutely has power behind it. It can inspire change. Obviously, my voice was threatening to them. That's why we're at now. That's why we can't stop this case, so that parents know that you can go to your local school board or to your town hall meeting and you can speak what you feel and how you feel about something. You can never give up, especially when it comes to your children, because at the end of the day, we know what's best for them. And, you know, when it comes to school boards, we don't know what's going on until you tell us what's going on sometimes. And thankfully, I am on my local school board now, and I can tell you when people come to our school board meetings, I make sure I address them when I can. If they email me, I contact them back. I go to my superintendent and say, listen, this is an issue. What can we do to fix it? So you can absolutely be the change. 100%, you can be the change. And I know it can be scary. I know it can be overwhelming. But our kids aren't too good for it. They're worth every bit of it.
Well, you are leaving behind a very powerful legacy. Thank you two so much for joining today. I know you both have really busy schedules, so I appreciate the time you took to tell your story. And we'll be watching the court docket to see when the opinion comes out. But thank you two so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us, Anne-Marie.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.